Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, welcome to Get a Grip. I'm Shane Bacon, joined by, I'm going to say, if you're listening to this podcast, probably one of your top 300 favorite athletes in the world, Max Homa. Would you say that's fair?
I'll take it.
Top 300, 350?
Yeah, all right.
You never know.
Let's go down the other way. You're going up.
going through, obviously, continued quarantine. A reminder to everybody, stay safe. We're seeing what's going on in New York, and we just, you know, thoughts with you guys. It's got to be just brutal to be in that area and have to deal with this. Be smart. Follow the rules. We try to remind you that every week. Max, you got any tips for people? Just try to continue to stay safe during all this?
Yeah, if you glue 2 yardsticks together, that's 6 feet.
And just carry that around?
Just carry it around. I saw the guy with like the whole spaceship looking thing.
Did you see the guy with the stick that was running?
And he
was swinging it at people?
I like that.
Seems a little aggressive.
Hey, these are times where you need to be aggressive.
Last week, we asked all of you listeners and people on Instagram to donate to your local food banks. Max, we were sending out stickers and our very limited quantities
very
of hats.
Limited.
That is a sad little box in my house right now. The donations currently, according to your math on your iPhone, $35,287.35 donated. And that is just from me putting all these numbers into a Word document off of Instagram. I'm sure there is a way better way we could have done this, but thank you all. Unbelievable.
Thank you. That's amazing. That's really cool.
Big donations. We did get a heavy donation, which means
I will be shaving my arms and legs.
That was early, the day the podcast
dropped.
It was
like 4 hours, and I did not anticipate. I thought it was going to be a bit more of a sweat. I know people were talking about setting up GoFundMes for it, so I was waiting to see if I was going to allow that or not, and then all of a sudden I just got slapped in the face with a big old donation.
Yeah, it was a nice donation. We thank everybody that sent anything in. If you sent in $2,000, if you sent in $2, we appreciate it. The food banks are obviously thankful for it. They need any and all money. Somebody sent in one of their receipts. I think it was for $125, and it listed under the amount how many meals that is.
Oh, wow.
It was, it gave me goosebumps. Yeah. Like 45 meals or
something.
That's
cool. That's cool to see a direct relation to your dollar being spent.
Yes. And so we are going to get more hats. So if we send our first run of hats out and you don't get one, we are ordering more hats from Imperial. Big thanks to them for doing it. We still have plenty of stickers, $5 or more to a food bank. Any food bank in the country, we will send you a Get a Grip sticker. Just send us the receipt at Get a Grip Pod. And one thing we asked for, Max, we said if you send a certain amount of money, I would write a limerick or a haiku. You just had to give us subject topics, and Max would read these cold read.
I'm nervous.
Never seen before.
I'm nervous.
Read them on the podcast. So we're going to start with that. Before we get to it, you had a Feel Good Friday, right?
I do. I have a Feel Good Friday, and then I have just a story that's random, but it'll hopefully make you feel good. If you guys are on Twitter, which most of you are, there was a video, I think Rex Chapman put it out, of a girl named Coco driving around. Did you see that video? She's driving through the community, and everyone's cheering for her because she is in remission from her cancer.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
Okay, well, that's pretty popular. Just go on the internet.
Okay.
So she's in the car with her family. On her way home from the hospital for the first time. And because of the social distancing, they couldn't have a big party. Her entire street for what seems like a mile is lined with cars, people cheering with signs,
nice.
Just cheering for her, window down, you know, everyone's 6 feet away. And it was just like the most perfect way to do it. Well, I know her family. Like I did not realize that was going on in their lives, but it's one of my buddy's business partner, Kelly. And so I got to talk to my buddy about it, and he just said it was very cool. It sucks that it had to be done in our cars, but awesome that everyone showed up. She's tough as nails. It's been a long year for her and their family. So it's just really cool. That video, I will send it to you or show it to you. It is unbelievable. It gives you the chills. Cool to see, especially honestly, the week before, you know, my buddy Brian, this all happened kind of within 24 hours. So that was sweet. Kind of touched home even more just because I know her dad, and that was awesome. But then I have a funny story, completely off topic. Hopefully you guys like it. I don't know why I forgot to tell this, but at the Phoenix Open this past year on Saturday, I finished my round. I'm messing with my bag, kind of in like the player media area, and there's a dad and his son, and son's probably, I don't know, 8 to 10 years old. He's leaning up against this fence, super cool looking. Like, he, all he needed was like a cigarette, and he would have been somebody from, you know, back in like the greasers. And he goes,
so just wanted to point out, that's Max Homa pushing for 8 to 10 year olds to get into the cigarette game. If anybody has any cigarettes, you want to send them to any of these 8 year olds, that'd be awesome. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So definitely, I'm not pushing for it, but I'm just saying, if it was an animated picture, it'd been hilarious. So he's leaning up against this thing, and he goes, "Hey," I'm like, "What's up?" And he goes, "Nothing." And he's like, already really cool, like young kid. I'm kind of intimidated by him. He's still leaning up against this fence, and he goes, "Who do you think's going to win the Super Bowl?" And I was like, "I don't know. I think the Chiefs are going to win. Who do you think's going to win the Super Bowl?" He goes, "I don't really watch football." And I looked at him. I was like, "What?" And his dad goes, "That was a really weird question." And I was like, "That was a really weird question." So then I go over to him. You know, he comes back over to me, sorry. And he goes, "Hey, do you mind signing a flag for me?" And I was like, "Sure, of course." I was like, "Who's your favorite golfer?" And he goes, "I don't really want to tell you." I was like, "All right, man. Like, doesn't matter. Like, I really like you. Like, you're the coolest kid I've ever
met in my life."
So I finished signing. I hand it back to him, and he comes back over to me again. He goes, I'll tell you who my favorite golfer is." I was like, "All right, who is it?" He goes, "It's Ricky Fowler. I just didn't want to tell you because I didn't want it to, you know, bug you." I was like, "It's all right, man." He goes, "All right, see ya." I was like, "You're the coolest kid in the world."
Nice.
Yeah. So that's not a feel good Friday. It's just a funny story.
Was he Ricky'd out, or was he just?
No, not at all.
Okay.
He was as cool. He just was a cool kid, man. Like I said, he just like hit all the swag.
I mean, okay, first question I have is, how good do you think you are at guessing kids' ages?
Horrendous, because even when I said 8 to 10, I thought I should just open it up to like 15.
I'm so bad.
Okay, even with a kid, you better get good.
Well, even with a young son, I've got no clue.
Well, Henry's like 4 though, right?
But you know, I mean, I'm better now probably because of him.
Yeah.
I have a better sense of what a baby is.
Yeah.
But buddies will bring their kids, and like, this kid might be 2 or 7.
So that's what I struggle with. It's like, I don't have a timeline of when kids start to talk or walk or whatever. So, or like play sports like recreationally. So when I see them, I don't have a reference of, oh yeah, he's walking, so he's 11.
He's got to be between this window.
Yeah,
we never learn the windows.
No, if you tell me high school, I know you're probably between 13 to 18, but or 20 for you, because it probably took you a couple extra years.
Yeah, definitely. You know what's weird is I've got friends that have kids. They'll have multiple kids, and they have an idea of when my son was born, and they'll ask just these asinine questions. Like, is he talking yet? They ask him, Henry's like 4 months old.
So even I know
old.
That one.
Like, is he talking yet? But I'm like, well, he's 4.
That might be a shout out to you, just because you're like such a professional talker that they think maybe he got the genes. Like, Tiger was playing golf when he was 18 months old.
It's like Joe Buck's twins are probably already talking.
Oh, yeah.
They're
yeah.
definitely, they have like
absolutely.
Perfect diction. All right, so here, we got some poetry for you. I want to get into
this
it.
This is going to be the worst part.
So the first one is from @DKBDuffer. And he simply asked, he's from Canada, he said, "Do you mind throwing a little Canadian flair?" So with that, I'm going to hand you this. Now, I'm not going to let you touch this piece of paper. I'm going to put it in front of you. This is a limerick from our boy, Max Homa, reading the first limerick.
Okay. From the U.S., just up north we go. Less courses, sure, but the talent, whoa. Mo, Stan, George K., damn. Brooke H., Dillette, comma, Graham. The best, that's easy. The lefty, true pro.
Do you agree with the Mike Weir being the best Canadian golfer of all time?
My vote's Graham Dillette, just because he blocked you on Twitter.
Unblocked me.
I know, but that
gave me
coolest.
A second chance.
Is he the best? Brooke H. is probably going to pass him.
Brooke H.
Unless
is pretty
Hadwin
dirty.
And Corey make a serious run, but Brooke H. is pretty good.
You know, Brooke
Henderson.
Brooke Henderson makes me feel better about my super long golf swing.
Oh, hers is 2 of mine. Like, it is double the length of my backswing.
You know,
it's sick.
So we talk a lot about the perfect pro swing. You know, there's not a lot of the Jim Furyk-y swings out there anymore. I even wrote, I think earlier this year on Twitter, that nothing makes me happier than seeing a young pro with a goofy swing.
Yeah.
Because it's so rare.
Right.
When you see like a Brooke Henderson swing long like that, and then you obviously, you know, there's Phil and Bubba, guys like that do it. Are you surprised when you see the not perfect swing on tour, or is it just kind of what you're expecting to see considering there's 1,000 professional golfers?
I guess both. I guess part of it, though, is Brooks is like perfectly on plane, so it's a little different. Like, even John Daly's wasn't super on plane going back, so it felt different. Hers just feels like she's just like incredibly flexible in her wrist. So, but yeah, I guess you see so many unique golf swings, whether that means like imperfect or not, but you see so many different ones that I guess it doesn't shock you. It does. I was saying about this not that long ago. It does seem like a lot of the best players, especially like the best drivers of all time, have had interesting moves or maybe more unique moves. I mean, Furyk has an interesting move. Obviously, Brooke has an interesting move. So hers is.
I mean, Dustin's kind of got. Dustin's got an interesting move.
So you got to think like it. You're going to see a lot of them, but Brooks to me is just very on plane. She just goes on a lot longer than just most keeps people going. Do. Yeah.
So great job on that. I thought you nailed
Thanks.
It.
Thanks. I didn't mispronounce any words.
I feel like you kind of nailed the cadence.
The cadence.
Good job on the limerick. I didn't even tell you what's supposed to happen, and I thought you did a great job.
Thanks,
so this
man.
Is from Ryan Clay. This is a haiku, so this is a little different.
Yep. This is about nature.
It's about nature. This one is he wanted something on the best shooter in college basketball history. And I was bringing you a little bit back to our last podcast.
Right.
So you got to, I want you
Did
to think.
Did we clear this with all the people on Twitter who said that we were wrong about so many of
goodness.
Our opinions?
We'll get into that in a minute. I want you to read this haiku. Here you go.
All right, haiku time. Oh, God. Many have passed through, but none have shot like Salim, bro of Mighty Mouse.
Well done. I thought you killed it. Good
the
job.
Best shooter ever.
Best shooter in college basketball history.
Unbelievable.
Salim Stoudemire. Okay. Let's address it.
Let's address it.
One of the things that I think is very important to do in life, especially right now in life, just make sure you read.
Just read.
Everything.
Reading.
There's no fine print on our podcast. No. There's no fine print in the beautiful graphics that the people at Octagon made us. Are favorite college basketball players ever.
I couldn't be more frustrated. I actually took a step away from Twitter for 48 hours
because
I got so frustrated with people. And I did the poor thing of going back and forth, but I felt like in this time of quarantine where I have nothing but time on my hands, I needed to explain to people that an opinion is an opinion and it can be mine. I'm sorry. I have seen videos of Larry Bird playing college. It's awesome. He has no emotional control over me. Whereas JJ Redick, I can put myself in a place in my old house at home watching his games. Larry Bird, I just like will see a highlight clip of a minute on YouTube and it's all grainy. For me, college basketball isn't Larry Bird. I'm sorry. I can see all the video I want. He's never going to be my favorite.
And you're there again. It's our favorite. This is a tweet. I'm sorry. This is a text from Max on Thursday, 4:58 p.m. Arizona time. I may be over Twitter. I need to remove myself from this pit of despair.
It is.
Right after the podcast came out, all these people were coming at me. I responded to some guy who said something about Pete Maravich. Said,
yeah.
Well, you don't know anything. I said, oh, yeah, I remember watching him when I was negative 26 years old. You know,
and
our guys.
Saying something.
Our plan. Saying something. These are the people we like. All right, so this was, I asked people that wanted poetry to just send me a couple of notes.
Yeah.
So this guy, Punching from the Trees on Twitter.
I like that name.
Started his Twitter account just because he donated.
Oh, that's really cool.
And he wanted to let us know.
That's cool to see.
It's at NE, so New England, NE Panhandle Golf. His title's Punching from the Trees. And he said, can you do something on my buddy Nads? His nickname is Nads. His name is Adam. Okay. I said, sure. Yeah, whatever you want to do. It's fine. I think he sent in like maybe $1,000 donation to a food bank. So first of all, thank you very much for that. Said he got a nickname in college. They were good buddies.
Nickname Nads?
Yeah, but it's just they call him that because he's like, it's his first name. It's like a play off that.
Okay.
Said he's a degenerate Syracuse fan.
Degenerate.
So, I mean.
Bummer.
Yeah, he said he walked up to John Wallace in 1984, John Wallace is with Christie Brinkley, sticks out his hand and says, quote, you know, my email password is Wallace44. Obviously, he played golf at Syracuse and walked away. Said Wallace couldn't stop laughing. Now, that is a guy that isn't scared to go up and talk to somebody.
That's a
right?
dedicated
That
fan.
Is our boy. He said that this is a guy that named all of his golf clubs. He names all of his clubs their own name.
I like the first story better.
he said he called he had the Nike Slingshot irons.
Well, he's back in good graces.
There you go. Said he had a diamond wedged face. The wedge that we called it Diamond Boy. He called his putter
Diamond Boy. That's a good name.
Yeah, and he had a Cleveland wedge and he called it Platinum Boy.
Yeah. All right.
This guy and his friends are big into it. And the last thing he said about his friend Adam is he said he might be the only person on the planet I've met that has hairier arms than Max. I have a picture. So I wrote a limerick.
Okay. Did
about
they get to
Adam.
Choose if it was a limerick or a haiku? Or did you choose?
You know, I tried to make the limericks when I got a little bit more because there's more to play with,
yeah,
right?
Hey, I'm not judging you.
No. So here we go.
You have your creative.
So this is from Punching from the Trees, a little bit of a summary of his good buddy.
Okay. All right. So Nads.
Yep.
All right, Nads. Born Adam, it's now Nads he's called. Fan of Mello for how he once balled. He names all his clubs, stack and tilt, he still flubs. Arms just like me, mine soon will be bald.
Yes, they will.
That was well done.
Well done. All right, and then I got a bonus quarantine haiku. This is just one.
Quarantine haiku.
Yeah, I wrote this for us.
We all need this. All right, quarantine haiku from the Get a Grip pod. Wash our hands. I practice it constantly. 20 seconds at least.
It's really good. Thank you very much.
Hey, well done, Shane.
I thought you did a great job.
That was fantastic.
Those are some thrown together poetry in a time where we all need a smile. Hope you enjoyed it. Which leads us directly into a Max Homa idea. And also, just real quick, can you make sure you preface what we're doing?
Oh, so this is an opinion piece. we are picking our top five favorite sports nicknames of all time. This is hard. I have 12 on my list. We were going to do top five, which we will. I'm going to add some of my favorites after. I did research on this. I looked up why one of them is even a nickname because I didn't know a lot. I also didn't realize by looking all these up, like, I did not add like Magic Johnson because he's Magic Johnson. We didn't add Tiger, I think was our rule, because it's just Tiger to us. I tried to go with actual nicknames.
So I'm glad you said that. Totally agree. Babe Ruth out, Magic
sure.
out, Tiger out.
Yeah.
It's who they are.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with my first one. This is a no-brainer. I don't know if it's number one always, but it's number one right now, the Black Mamba. Tough to beat.
So I was social distancing yesterday with a couple of buddies. We were sitting in a yard.
It's like
20
bird
feet
out.
From each other. And I asked my buddies that know you what they thought your first pick would be. Everybody said Kobe.
Yeah, I mean, and it's okay. It's okay to be predictable at times. This was a no-brainer. Number one on the list, never be removed, Black Mamba.
So since we're doing no-brainers, I'll go with the no-brainer of mine. I've mentioned plenty of times on social media that this is my favorite guy playing basketball since it's following in your favorite player basketball footsteps. Penny, Anthony Hardaway. Penny was great. I loved everything about him. I had in my room as a kid, I think I probably at one point might have had 4 or 5 of the little Penny dolls.
Wow.
I had 2 or 3 posters.
Was your password to any of your emails Penny?
No, I didn't go up to Penny and say that
Penny
to him.
Penny 1 cent?
I had one pair of his shoes, and they were the cool ones, you know, the ones with the big swoosh on the side. They weren't the foam posits, but they were awesome. Penny was the guy. Penny was my guy.
He has the best Twitter handle in Twitter.
I don't think I know what it is.
I am 1 cent.
That is pretty sweet.
Pretty cool.
So, Penny, that's my first pick. I feel like we did a good job of just throwing a couple off the board that were going to be easy to go with.
We're gonna pick them.
So I'm going to go with my second is a little in the same vein. I think Bleacher Report has a top 300 best sports nicknames ever article. And I was scrolling through it. This one wasn't number one, which I felt was criminal. The great one.
Yeah.
The great one is it's so perfect. I feel like the golf version of this is the king is the great one.
Yeah.
It's
simple.
It's perfect.
And it's to the point. Like, we all, and also when you're that good, no one's argued it.
Nobody's like, there's never been a... There's not one person that's arguing how good Wayne Gretzky was. You all know the stats. You all know that if he threw all his goals out, he would still be the leading points guy, the great one.
I have a great story about the great one.
Let's hear it. Big golfer.
Won my first professional golf tournament with his wife as my partner in the BMW Celebrity Pro-Am. Fortunate to become friendly with them. They are both the best. Wayne is the nicest guy on the planet. I mean, I've been to his house where he's asked me what he can get me, and I'm like, I'm in the great one's house. Like, I'll just figure it out. But we went and played golf on Janet's birthday. Her birthday's in January, so it was right after Christmas. And I guess for Christmas, she got a new car. So on one of the holes, we end up passing a group that was in front of us. Janet's up at the front tees. We are on the back tees. And so it's a bunch of, you know, the guys congregated around. Some of Wayne's buddies, you know, asked, hey, Wayne, you know, on Christmas, Janet woke up to a new car. What'd she wake up to on her birthday? And he just deadpan said, the great one.
Nice.
I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. That's the ultimate card to pull. I was like, yeah, you're about as cool as they come.
You know what? So I was at Shinnecock in 2018 was the first year that I was doing the co-hosting thing with Joe, and it was Faxon and I had our own booth, and then Joe and Zinger had their spot over by 18. And we did a morning run on Saturday morning, got up, and like kind of done for the morning at least, and we get to go have lunch and we can go walk around. And Brad always goes and talks to guys that are getting ready to go out in the afternoon. And I tend to kind of stand a couple feet back just so I can hear what's going on.
6 feet back?
Well, back then you could be two feet.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
that was 2018. And we're getting up, and Brad, who, if you don't know Brad Faxon, might have more contacts in his phone than anybody in the world. And he loves it. He loves having new contacts in his phone. He loves having important people in his phone. He says, Wayne might be coming up in a minute. We might be doing an interview. Well, I'm wondering in my head who Wayne, like Wayne Brady.
Yeah, the heck is
like, I'm
Wayne?
Trying to think of like what Wayne pro golfer is playing on tour now. And about 2 minutes later, Wayne Gretzky comes in. Now, again, this is the first year I'm doing this job.
Yeah.
And this guy comes in who is, as you know, probably the top three most famous athlete in the last 60 years.
I also think he might be the only like unequivocal GOAT in his sport. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Bobby Orr gets arguments, but
okay. I didn't even know he got arguments.
I'm with you. I mean, I think it's without a doubt a Wayne Gretzky and everybody else.
Yeah. So he's a... Quite the guy to have to run into at your first.
So he comes
first
in.
Gig.
So we, you know, we IFB off, headphone off. We're like kind of unbuttoning the jackets and stuff. And all of a sudden, back in your spot.
Yeah.
My stat guy, luckily, had started to create a card on just some little notes on Gretzky. You know, just in case I, you know, get nervous or whatever. I mean, 5 minutes in, we're doing an interview live on it.
Yeah.
And it was, I still think to this day, the coolest thing I've done professionally.
For sure.
Was getting
awesome.
A chance to just sit with them. And, you know, Dustin.
And he's as normal as they get.
That's what,
too,
that's what I was
cool.
Surprised by.
He's not like intimidating as a human, which is nice.
So I did two.
Yeah, I'll do my second and third. My second is the answer. Allen Iverson.
Great
so
one.
Simple. It was so great. I loved it even more because I've always just grown up to hate the Celtics. And, you know, Paul Pierce ends up being the truth after. And it was just, it's a cool nickname, but after someone's the answer, it's just like kind of lame. So I liked it even more because it was like just contesting with the truth. But it was just perfect. It was AI, the answer. It was simple. Everyone knew him as it. And I thought it was cool because he was always kind of like, it fit. He was always the answer to the team's, you know, to the Sixers' issues. He would get the job done, put the team on his back. I love that nickname. It was so simple and to the point.
I had it on my list. It was kind of on that one that was right on the 4-5 area. Wasn't sure if I was going to include it. Did you find this, and you and I are, I would say, probably the bigger basketball fans than other sports. Did you find it hard to get nicknames that weren't basketball players?
Yeah, I also realized in this, and this was going to be in my honorable mentions, but like no good golf nicknames.
There's a couple, but not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot. Like I was trying to add golf nicknames and I didn't really like compared to, you know, the basketball and the football.
Basketball.
My next one is a football nickname, and I think it's the best nickname of all time. Primetime.
Oh, on my list too.
I mean,
first overlap.
It's as tight. I mean, it's so cool.
It's the best.
And because have you heard the story of why they nicknamed him Primetime?
No, let's hear it.
So this was, I've actually didn't have to do research on this one. I've read this one. So he, who knows if this stuff's true, but apparently the combine after he graduated college or not graduate college, finished college, I think. I don't know if he was not there for 4 years, was he?
I don't think so. But I
couldn't
tell you.
I think
sure
he was young. So young Dion, all the swag on the planet, comes out, does no other workout for the combine except the 40, rolls up apparently in a limo with all his jewelry on, strolls over. Everyone's been there working out, stretching, lifting, strolls over to the 40, takes off all his chains, kind of does a little quad stretch back and forth, maybe for 20 some seconds, gets down, runs, sets the record, picks up his stuff, leaves back in the limo. And they nicknamed him Primetime, like on the spot. They're like, yeah, that's you. You are Primetime. You're ready to go all the time. You are what we all want to watch.
On my list, that means I'm going to take him off and add somebody off.
Good thing we have a lot of reserves.
We do have a lot of reserves. We last night was discussing with my buddies. We all agreed, and I'm with you. I think it's one of the best.
Yeah.
Football nicknames ever. And it's,
I think it's the best.
Is it's not just a football nickname because, of course, he was played two sports. So, and I think when you dive into the Dion stuff and he played in like a World Series.
So he's in my top three, and this is a super random one because it's not like the in the Tigers of it, but he's in my top three favorite athletes of all time because when you go back on stories, they're amazing. Like he was flying to Braves games after football games. Like he was just like going back and forth,
right.
And it was so seamless. And maybe back then it was different, but if that happened now, I don't think people could wrap their head around it, like through the sports centers and the feeds of social media.
The talking
media.
Heads would be saying he's not so, they would be ragging on him. He's not as committed. If he went 0-for-4 one night in baseball, well, he needs to get baseball
up. He was amazing. He's just a freak. Him and Bo Jackson are two of the all-time best.
So since you trash-talked golf nicknames,
I just compared to the rest, I don't think there's very many good ones.
And you know, Lloyd Mangrum was on my list, but I am
trash talking at that.
I'm not including him. In my list of five favorites, I've got a golf one. The Big Easy.
Oh, I did not think of that. That
great
is so
nickname.
Good. All right, you're right. That
I feel
UN.
Like of the golf nicknames that I was teetering on, I've just always felt like that fit him perfect.
It absolutely. Even just when you watch him swing, you're like, yeah,
that's it. That's him.
That's your nickname.
And it birthed the Big Wheezy, which was also a good nickname.
Also a great nickname.
And I thought that was fun that people played off that. Obviously, Michelle was great. So I just feel like Ernie, Big Easy.
You're right.
Seamless.
That's an all-time
hand in
winner.
Hand. I'm going to go to a sport that I don't think you and I have ever talked about on this podcast. I mean, we're only, 10 episodes in, but.
Soccer?
NASCAR.
Oh, I didn't even know they had nicknames.
Dale Earnhardt. Do you know his nickname?
Oh, when you say it, I'm going to know it.
The Intimidator.
I didn't know it.
The Intimidator. What
terrible.
A nickname.
You went from the best to the worst.
I'm going to read you where it came from. He set a NASCAR Modern Era record of 4 consecutive wins and won 5 of the first 7 races. This was back in 86, okay? In the 1987 season, he earned the nickname The Intimidator, due in part to the 1987 Winston All-Star Race. During the race, he was briefly forced into the infield grass, but kept control of his car and returned to the track without giving up his lead. The maneuver is now referred to as the pass in the grass.
I like that. That's a good phrase.
And even though Earnhardt, interesting enough, didn't pass anybody when he made that move. That's still
also interesting.
That's still the thing. So after that,
I don't get how you can be intimidating in racing when you can't look another person in the eyes.
Dale Earnhardt was intimidating. All right, the glasses, the glare. He had kind of this tough personality. I think it's an unbelievable nickname.
All right. Hey, listen, it's an opinion.
I'll give you
your opinion.
Yeah, you're doing it. You're Twitter trolling me right now.
No, I didn't say you were wrong. I just said that's the worst one.
Oh, okay. So what are we at? Are we at 4 each?
I'm about to. No, I think I'm at. 3. So I'll give you my 4th and my 5th. This is where it's going to be really difficult. I'm going to give you, all right. I love this one. Grew up idolizing the guy. I also think the nickname fit even better when I was younger. It was The Kid, Ken Griffey Jr. I thought it was just kind of, he's always epitomized cool and smooth. And I thought it was just like a cool nickname. It's not a lot of flash, kind of like him. It's not a lot of like the flair. It's just, yeah, like when coming up, he was kind of that guy. He's the kid. When you say the kid, like think about how many the kids there are. But like he's the one. And he was always also the most enjoyable to watch play baseball. So I thought that it fit. It's just a kind of, like I said, I like these nicknames that are kind of to the point and simple for a lot of these great players, because there are so many. Like, the great one is kind of a no-brainer. The ones that are just simple to the point and kind of encapsulate the person. I thought that Ken Griffey was Jr. was kind of like that his whole career, even when he was no longer the kid. He just felt like the kid. I like that.
So his son played football at University of Arizona, and I was going to do a story on him.
Oh,
so the I dream. Grew up a huge Griffey fan, as everybody did. He was one of those players, I feel like, that, you know, when the 90s baseball felt really, really cool, I think that was really about as peak baseball as you can get. You had, obviously, the home run back and forth, you know, with Sosa and McGuire, and then the early 90s, you get Griffey coming up, and he was this backwards hat guy, and he was on this brutally tough Mariners team. I was on the treadmill in my apartment. I get this call from some random number. I go outside to answer, and it was Ken Griffey Jr. He was giving me some quotes about his son. Is for sure the most nervous phone call. I was like, "What? Who is this?" You know. But you're right. Even when he was 45, he felt like the kid.
Always.
Why is that?
I think because he moved gracefully. Like, kids kind of move like it's easy. I know he had a lot of injuries, but the way he swung the bat, it just never seemed like it was much of a thing. It just felt very natural. And I think kids, when you see a kid swing a golf club, it's just like, yeah, it's really, really good. That's really natural. My last one, this is the one I did research on because I've always loved this nickname. Never knew what the hell it
meant. I'm excited about Max's research.
Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Okay.
I love the nickname. Just, it's funny. It's fun. It's like, again, it's not something I know a lot about, but
nobody calls him Joe Jackson.
No one on this planet. So I looked it up. I'll just read it.
Can I ask you real quick before you get into this? Did you add this so that people wouldn't yell at you about not having somebody that's the 20s?
This worked out really well for me, though. So the origin essentially says Jackson started toting this nickname around years before he ever helped throw the World Series. When Jackson was a teenager, he tried to play a game while breaking in a new pair of cleats like we all have. The cleats started giving him a blister, so Jackson decided to finish the game barefoot. This is my favorite part of the story. Heckler called him a shoeless son of a gun, which in those days was probably way worse than insulting somebody's mama. And the name stuck. Today, he would just be a guy who got dropped for breaking a shoe endorsement contract. So that was from, I don't even remember, medium.com. But I loved it. I love the nickname. I love the story behind it. I even like just how it was written, a shoeless son of a gun. So I'm all in on Shoeless Joe Jackson. I wish I was old enough to watch him play back in the day.
Yeah, it's interesting that we're kind of, I feel like without any prep in terms of comparing lists, we have weaved through this similarly. I mean, we had the Kobe and Penny thing to start. I'm finishing with a baseball player I didn't watch because I was not alive when he played. Willie Mays.
Oh,
the Say Hey Kid.
Say Hey Kid.
Great nickname.
That's a good nickname. I feel like it's well thought out.
It's just, it rolls off the tongue. It's a little bit like Shoeless Joe.
Yeah, exactly.
It feels special. Well, I want to hear some. So I was talking to my sister driving to your house. My nephew is 12 years old and he is a sports nut.
Okay.
Sam. She's talking on the phone. She's like, Sam, what's your favorite sports nickname?
Is he just rattling him off?
You know, and you're sitting there thinking he's going to say, you know, a current quarterback,
yeah, Black Mamba, like
somebody like that. Walter Payton is who my 12-year-old nephew.
That's a really good one. That one was going to be on my list.
He threw up Megatron as well, which I thought was great. Who else do you have on your list?
And my favorite golf one is Slamming Sam Snead. I thought that was just a cool one.
The Walrus I had on my list. Walrus, yeah.
So I thought the Shark's pretty good.
Shark's great,
yeah. But I thought Slamming Sam Snead, all-time favorite nickname, just because. And this is like, I know it's not on my list because I don't think it's the best one, but it's just my favorite. To hear is Big Poppy.
Big Poppy's great.
I mean, it's just like a good nickname. It just, I don't even, you almost never hear David Ortiz anymore. You just hear Big Poppy. That was a good one. Dr. J, I think, is phenomenal.
I have Dr. J on my list, is iconic as well.
It's iconic.
Feels a little like Babe Ruth or Tiger, like we talked about.
Mr. October is just, I think that's, again, goes a little bit more towards the Wayne Gretzky of great one. It's something that will kind of always stand. Like, that's how he made his name. Clyde the Glide, I thought was kind of tight. It rhymes. I know you're a big poetry guy now.
I'm really deep into poetry now. The Admiral, I thought, was
Admiral
always
one. I mean,
it
good.
Played two ways, you know.
It
obviously.
Plays two ways. The bus was good because it literally looked like a bus running downfield, and then not an actual person. I just want people to know that I don't think this is a real person, but Benny the Jet.
Oh, wow.
So sick.
Benny the Jet.
And that was like, you know, my movie growing up. So Benny the Jet. So I would like to now hear your left off. I feel bad for all these names left off.
No, I mean, I threw most of mine your way. I mean, I had a few you had and then just kind of went through those. I had the Walrus, the King, Golden Bear, or some of the golf
ones. The King is pretty perfect. Pretty good.
LeBron's nickname, you know, kind of King James is pretty cool as well. It's there. I was looking up, I was trying to find a little bit like Dale Earnhardt, I was trying to find some lesser known sports, like a Michael Phelps. Did he have a nickname?
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And what I realized was
his could just be the GOAT.
But there's certain that don't need it. I mean, I was thinking about Serena. Right. You know, Serena would be a person that you would expect to have some awesome nickname, but she doesn't need it because her name, it's like Beyonce.
Just Serena
is all you need to know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Serena's Serena.
Yeah.
You're good.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, when you're those first name, like LeBron, for the rest of the history of Earth, LeBron will be one person. Somebody threw out LT to me yesterday, and I said, while I agree that LT is a great nickname, I bet if you pulled 100 people around the country, you'd get 5 or 6% that would think it was LaDainian Tomlinson.
And that's a perfect case study right there. The first name that goes in my head is LaDainian because that's who I grew up watching. I didn't grow up watching obviously the real LT. The best, by the way, LeBron thing that you just mentioned, there's an old article, this had to be 5-10 years ago, where it said, you know, LeBron James Jr., when asked about why he uses the number whatever in basketball, not his dad's number, he said, well, I don't want people to always just, you know, I want to live my own life, my own basketball life. And then there's a quote under and it says, next playing point guard, LeBron James Jr. And somebody in the crowd goes, who the hell is that guy? It's just perfect. Like, yeah, unfortunately, you name your kid LeBron and you are LeBron. That's who you're going to think of first.
Yes,
forever.
Yeah, that's
no offense. Hopefully LeBron James Jr. has a great career, but my gosh, it's hard to, it's like being Michael Jordan Jr. I mean, it's impossible to outlive.
It's tough. I mean, George Foreman did that to all his kids.
Yeah.
Named them all basically George. And, like, not really giving him much of a chance to break out of that shell. Also, last one I had on my list, Gary Payton.
Oh, the glove.
The glove was great.
That's a good one.
Just kind of what he was.
He was legit locked down.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So, following up with the nicknames, I presented this to you via text message, and I
this was tough.
Figured this would be a fun thing to do currently since no golf is being played. I asked you to build your perfect golfer, current golfers, so guys that are obviously playing, guys that aren't retired. So you could include a Vijay Singh or anybody else
who
is out there. But I mean, I figured yours would be more focused on
mine's
the guys
very
that are
modern,
like, week in and
at
week
this
out.
Exact moment, who I would pick for all these.
And I figured that would be the case. I wanted to preface with, if you did include somebody like Ernie, that would be okay. So basically, it's who you feel like if you were building the golfer.
If I was basically building Tiger Woods in 2000.
So basically, this is Tiger in 2000, but with everybody else.
Yeah.
So we'll start. First things first, the 2020 perfect golfer, your putter will be.
My putter is Jason Day. Still think he's got the best stroke. I still think he's way up there on the strokes game putting stats. When you watch him putt, he looks like a machine. He will be my putter going forward for a while. It was very close between him and Ricky. But from what I understand, Jason has been a more consistent putter, and I'm splitting hairs by saying like the best putter. So,
right.
So that's going
to
be my putter.
Well, and this is not meant to offend or leave anybody out.
No.
This is just simply to
that's
a guy
what I
that
think,
sees
yeah.
these players week to week.
He looks like a machine when he putts.
Right.
He truly does.
Yeah. And when he is a 10-footer, it always looks like it's going to go.
It always looks like it's going to go.
That, I feel like that putter, you know, that spider that all those TaylorMade guys are using, when it you see the camera angle right behind it, it's a little like your Scotty Cameron with that
looks,
you know,
very square.
Fangs,
yeah.
Is I feel like when it's shot behind, it always looked like those putts are going
to
go.
Yeah. It looks like the putter stays lower to the ground.
Yeah.
I don't really know what it is.
All right. So you got Jay. Let me write this down. You got Jason Day as your putter.
Yeah.
Okay. Around the green. So this is obviously chipping, pitching,
bunkers,
all that stuff.
Patrick Reed. He is a straight up wizard. Yeah.
Wow.
I'll never forget. I'd heard, you know, many stories about it. Obviously, he's a great golfer all around, but he is known for his short game and putting. I'd never gotten to play with him at the time, and I'm playing behind him in Memphis, and there's eighth hole he hits in the left bunker. It's completely dead where he is. He's like in the lip. And, you know, I go get a water. We're waiting for them to hit. And he's got, you know, kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out of this bunker. And so I go get a water. I come back. Didn't get to see him at the shot. And look up, and he's pretty much tapping in. And I was like, I asked Joe, I said, is that for par? He goes, yeah. I was like, that's not possible. And he goes, yeah, I don't really know. He goes, you know, he basically said, Patrick, he has a sick short game. And he does. He is. When I play with him, I ended up playing with him in a week. He won at Northern Trust, and it lived up to the hype. He made it look very, very easy. So his is, and I also thought that his would be an interesting one to say, because I don't think a lot of people give him quite enough credit for right. it. It is a staple of his game, and I think he knows how good it is too, because he's pretty bold going into at pins, because he knows how, he's kind of got the fill thing. He knows he can get up and down from everywhere.
So I was just finishing the Bamberger Tiger book that comes out on Tuesday. Tiger quote about Augusta that goes with what you're saying, talking about players that were just unbelievable around the greens. And to Tiger, the guy that was always the best at it was Olafable.
Yeah.
And he would pick at Olafable's brain a lot. They would always talk about it. He did it in 2019. And there was a quote about it, and I don't have it exactly in front of me, but it was basically like Phil, Tiger saying, you know, Phil is spectacular around the greens, but when it comes to pitching at this golf course, I'll take Olafable all day long.
Interesting.
So I'm going to tell you this. When you get practice, whenever the Masters happens, practice round, you should go up to Olafable and ask him for practice round.
Interesting.
You should go bug him.
Yeah.
Right. Do you need to send a note? How do you do that? How do you get a practice round with this?
We'll see.
Email?
I don't know.
Text?
I don't think it's text.
Send a letter?
I'll send a snail mail.
Yeah, you should.
Handwritten.
You could write on the
Hello,
back of the poetry clip.
Yeah, I also added a limerick that has nothing to do with you and might confuse you.
Don't read the back.
Yeah,
just read my request to play.
Yeah.
I think you should do an Olafable practice round.
All right.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'll work it into the schedule, hopefully.
Yeah. I don't know what you already have planned.
I don't know how this works.
Yeah, and when it's going to happen. Yeah, but anyway, that's an idea. So you've got Jason Day's your putter.
Putter.
Patrick Reed is getting the ball up and down, giving Jason Day easy looks.
Yeah.
Who is flagging irons?
I have two here. Because
No, you can't pick two.
Can I use Tiger?
Yes.
Then Tiger.
Okay.
My backup was Dustin Johnson.
Now you can't use Tiger again.
No, I won't.
Okay.
My backup was Dustin Johnson. He's sick with the irons too. But Tiger, to me, proved it at Royal Melbourne at the Melbourne. At the President's Cup, that he is still the best iron player of all time.
I also
like standing at this moment.
I also like that you said Johnson after Dustin, because we got confused.
Well, some people hear Justin.
Yeah,
you know,
he's been called that on the first tee before, right?
Yeah,
Justin Johnson.
Justin Johnson.
So so far we've got a couple of Masters winners. We got Tiger, Patrick Reed. We got Jason Day, and this one I find interesting now.
I have a strong take on this, so I like that you asked me this one.
This is Fairway Woods. Now, I feel like there's a big gap amongst every parts of professionals' games versus amateurs, but when I'm talking about professional golfers versus really good amateurs or even mini tour players, I've always been the most impressed with two things. One is how pros play out of plugged lies, because you never look at it as a negative. You always feel like you can get it up and down. And the second is how well you guys hit fairway woods and how reliable you are with them.
Sure. Best fairway wood player, I don't think it's even close. I'll go kind of close. But I think Justin Thomas is the best fairway wood player. He has hit, when you go through his highlight reel, he's hit a handful of fairway woods to spots you couldn't imagine. Though the one that everyone remembers is the one at Aaron Hills,
yeah.
Which Joe told me he was caddying for Chap there, and Chap had like a wedge in it, and they had to play away from the pin because he said it was so difficult. So for him to hit a 3-wood to 5 feet was impossible. But also that
from
same
like 297.
Day, from like 297, that same day he had a 3-wood to like 8 feet on the drivable par 4,
right
over the top of the flag. He had a 5-wood at the Honda. Close against Luke List, end up winning that in a playoff. He hits the fairway woods off that deck so freaking well. I think that it's tough. Rory has hit some great ones, and I don't
that's
take
the only argument
away.
You get for me.
That's the only argument I can see. But Justin has hit them under the gun so often. I know Rory has the one at the Honda that was wild, but Justin, I just feel like has done it more often, and he's hit some that I feel like people, maybe only Rory can think, yeah, that's even doable. So he's got all the shots too with it, and he hits it pretty cool off the tee as well. He hits a low one, all the shots.
So My argument would be Rory. I think I wrote earlier this year that I felt like Rory was the best ever with the Fairway Woods because he, to your point, he's hit a lot under the gun.
He hit that the K Club. He hit those two.
Yeah, and the one at the Honda that year.
Yeah.
When he ended up losing that playoff
to Russell Henley.
After
all that, yeah.
And he missed that eagle putt. That's what got him in the playoff. But yeah, the Aaron Hills JT 3-wood is you're. I mean, we were covering that U.S. Open, and it was hard to get close.
Yeah,
and he hits this just mile high 3-wood. You know, he was wearing those pink pants that day, and I was doing interviews. He walked in, interview him live. It was great. JT's one of the best. He's just one of the best at all the stuff.
Smart dude.
And as he's walking out off air, I'm like, hey, by the way, nice pants. He's like, yeah. He looked around, and he goes, you bet. He goes, you better shoot 62. You better shoot 63 if you wear these pants. I was like, see, that's why he's this guy.
He pulled it off. Yeah.
He's great. So,
do you even have to ask me the next one?
No.
Okay.
Can we just skip it? Do we even? You know what? Let's not
I'm
even
not
mention
say
a name.
It. Everybody knows who the best.
We're not going to mention the name.
This.
We have driver. We're not mentioning the name.
No,
we're not even going to say his name.
We're going to do mental. Instead?
We'll go to mental.
Brooks Koepka.
Okay.
Brooks proves it that. In the biggest moment, he is very much not scared of anything. It seems like anytime he's got a battle with Rory, he gets up for it and just asserts his will, kind of. He's just nails. Even in not winning the U.S. Open, it took Gary to really clutch up. And this is when Brooks is making putts from everywhere, but he just strolls out there like it's nothing. He showed up at the WGC in Memphis like 25 minutes before his tee time. And I know he said, I warmed up, I did all my stuff, and I get that, but still just to have the guts to do it. Like the mental, his mental is spectacular, obviously, right? He's proved it in the last 3 or 4 years with all the majors. People who win majors are tough as nails and have a mental edge over everybody. And he is clearly the most dominant major performer in recent memory.
You know, when you talk about the majors he's won, this one probably isn't brought up enough in terms of how he handled it in between his ears, but having that big lead at Bethpage and it slipping away and having Dustin right behind
you
playing well to be able to click it back in and finish that one off. And you saw it on the 72nd hole, you saw it on 18 when he was all fired up, but I mean, there was a moment there where you were thinking he's going to choke this thing away.
Well, it's like the perfect explanation of golf. Most of the time, you have your struggle 9 holes when you win a golf tournament earlier in the week, and then you get it going on the weekend, or maybe it's like Saturday, first 9. It's very rare that it happens Sunday afternoon where you still win. He played, I'm telling you, I understand that I'm not a major champion, and I can't give you my experience points on this, but I walked around that golf course, and Joe and I thought that if anybody got to 10 under, they were going to probably win. He was 12 under through 2 days. Like we couldn't really wrap our mind around it. He was playing unbelievable golf, and he does so again on Saturday. And it's just like a formality. Well, his struggle 9 came at the end of the golf tournament. And I think that's, again, we don't see it very often because it's hard for that person to end up actually winning. It's considered a choke, which I've never agreed with. It's more the timing of your golf being good for 72
holes. At some
point,
it's
never happens.
Off.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, it starts to unravel a little bit, and the golf course is hard, so it doesn't lend you any easy holes to like kind of settle down. And again, for him, like you said, for him mentally, just to stay in it and win that golf tournament was very, very, very impressive.
Just a side tangent: what's the hardest course you've played professionally? What's the golf course that will forever be in your brain?
Are we taking out like conditions? Because that day the Arnold Palmer at Bay Hill was
Say on any given day it would be
considered. Bethpage was really difficult.
Okay.
Now, I will say that Bethpage is not my favorite way to make something hard. It was essentially just like, we're going to grow the rough really high, so if you don't get off the tee, you're in trouble. So I'm not saying it's stupid. It's just like one way to make a golf course hard. I like it a little better when it's firm, and that's the difficulty, where like getting to pins that are on the front of a green, you have to kind of think your way through it. But that, like I said earlier in the pod, that I was even through 2 rounds and played very, very nice golf for 2 days. Now, I didn't do anything crazy special, but I kept the ball out of the rough and hit a lot of good long irons. So that was hard. I could see that course being difficult pretty much day in and day out. But I mean, the one that takes absolutely no setup to be hard every time, not every time, but pretty much every time you play it, is Riviera. Riviera can be soft and you think it's a little bit tricky, and it could be firm and you're going to think it's super tricky. That's why I think that's the best golf course I've played. But yeah, I haven't gotten to play a ton of, I mean, Marion was quite difficult, but
right.
Bethpage was just like, every hole you stood on, it was just you're just like holding your breath. You felt tired just because you had to keep striping it off the tee and you had to keep hitting driver. It was just
anytime you hit driver, you made a mistake, every hole.
Every hole.
What is it, like two or three is the only hole you don't really hit driver on?
Yeah,
if
you could kind of not hit it on like 11 if you wanted, but then again, then you're coming in with a long iron, and again, the rough around the greens is really thick, so like you need to hit green. So that was one of the most impressive. I haven't, you know, I wasn't at Pebble when Tiger did his whole U.S. Open thing, but I got
you were 10 years old.
I got to be at Bethpage when Brooks did those, and that was the most amazing two rounds of golf I could even fathom.
So we have Jason Day putting. We have Patrick Reed around the greens. Tiger Woods, up and comer. I think he's got a chance to be something at some point, iron player. JT is hitting fairway woods. We're not speaking of who we think is the driver.
He who shall not be.
He's Voldemort of this thing. You've got Brooks Koepka in between the years. And the last thing I asked you is look. And when I say look on the golf course, look under pressure, the outfit, how they look and what they wear, it fits who they are. They look cool almost all the time. They it makes sense who you got.
Adam Scott.
Yeah.
Guy's sponsored by Burberry. He's a professional golfer. I mean, he's silky smooth. He's got the perfect swing. He's got the perfect demeanor. I've never heard.
He made those parachute pants.
He
made
the parachute. He had the bowling shoes on.
Sansa belts.
The guy is just cool. I've never heard one bad thing about him ever. His temperament is so smooth. He never really gets that down. Never gets that up. He is who people should aspire to be. And his fit is nice too. Like he does everything. He's the guy who can make everything seem cool.
Yeah, I agree. You know what? It's just Australians, man.
Australians are
It's
so
a bummer.
Cool.
Australians are way up there.
They already
on
have the
coolest.
Accent. It's kind of BS.
Because Australia, I've always said, is like Canadians are really cool. Australians like Canadians with a tan.
Yeah, I don't know if people have said Canadians are really cool.
I think Canadian. I think so, but I also... I feel like universally people are big fans.
All right.
You don't think so?
Oh, I think they're fans because they're super nice.
Do you want to read the limerick again about them?
I think they're really nice. I don't think that they get it for being like cool. Like the Aussies are cool.
Right.
Like I'm not saying that Canadians can't be cool, but they're more widely like liked because they're super nice.
Well, I mean,
sorry, eh? Like that's what they do.
I was trying to get sorry, eh, in the limerick and I couldn't figure out exactly where to squeeze it in. So that's pretty good. That's pretty good. We've got, by the way, you know what I'm excited to get? Or people on Twitter be like, so Luke Donald, is that who you were talking about, the driver? We know what you're going to do. We already are a step ahead of you all in doing something like that. That's pretty good. Adam Scott rocking the outfit and the look. You said Adam Scott cannot not look cool. I was at a Titleist shoot late last year.
And imagine having to go after him in a shoot and be like, sorry, guys, the C squad's here.
Hey, Max, you're up next. We just had Adam in here. We spent 2.5 hours with him. We'll do 15 with you. So there were all these hats like laid out you could put on or take or whatever. And there was this super high flat bill. And he goes, I can't wear that hat. I look ridiculous. And I was standing there. I go, dude.
Prove it.
I go, you can't look ridiculous. And he goes, look. And he put it on. And I will say, he didn't look ridiculous.
He
didn't look like Adam Scott.
He was as close as you could be to not ridiculous.
It was like
I put it on and I
super flat bill, like the ironed flat bill, like the early Ricky hat, you know?
If I put that on, I get laughed off of the.
You would not be allowed in it again. I agree. We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So we've got some questions from listeners. These are from a couple of weeks ago. We've got some from just today that Max sent out. We got some really good ones. I wanted to start. A friend of mine, Mark Freed, shout out, asked us, which snack during the whole quarantine have you not been able to get away from? And his was Dots. Very
Dots
underrated
a good
fruit
one.
Snack.
It stays
fruit
in.
Candy.
He might actually not be able to get away with it because it's just stuck in his teeth.
It's still there.
Like, just always going to be there. Forever
it's like a
the
gummy
quarantine.
Or Skittle.
Yeah. In 4 years, he's going to go to the dentist and they're going to be like, wow, we found a dot. He goes, yep, quarantine
2020.
For coronavirus.
I
know exactly where that is.
He did send me 3 separate pictures of different bags of dots he had around the house.
Oh, that's
big
tough.
Dot guy. Do you have one?
Reese's.
You've been going hard on Reese's. Your wife has cake.
She has
in
cake.
The house when I walked in.
Oh, by the way, my wife said I need to talk less on this thing, so I hope I'm doing better. She like everybody, wants to hear more Shane voice, less me voice.
So have you purchased Reese's extra, or did you just already have them around the house?
A little of this, a little of that.
Are we talking Reese's pieces, or are we talking the
oh, we got
two
them all. We got the thins.
What are those?
Let me tell you, it's just thinner. it's right in the name. Those are pretty good. We got the cups where you like actually take off the tinfoil. And then we also have the mini cups, which they're already unwrapped.
Those are like the Halloween ones, right? That's the go-to.
Are those Halloween?
Well, you throw
in little bags? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are, you open the bag and you just grab. There's very little BS.
I do nice notes for all the trick-or-treaters at my house.
Of course you
no
do.
No candy. I just write a nice little poems. Note. Great outfit. Have a good November. Enjoy the weather.
You really are the nicest. You're no, Canadian.
It's no candy though.
Shane,
they
Canadian
just walk
bacon.
Away frustrated. it's actually, you know what we do is our Halloween go-to move is we sit out front, make margaritas, no doorbell, and we pass
like
the candy.
I feel like your snack you can't get away from is going to be something healthy like kale.
No, chips and salsa. Always.
Okay, that's not bad. On
chips and salsa, guac.
Yeah, we have some guac. I'm pumped. We got some guac.
Henry, 9-month-old, into guac.
Really?
Really into it.
God, how amazing would that be if his first word was guacamole?
It would be a lot of syllables. Would not work on a limerick or a haiku.
Yeah.
He's
got the genes.
It would take up the entire stanza. Chips and salsa, always my go-to snack. I'll take it at 2 p.m., 8 p.m., 12 midnight, whatever. Love it. One of my favorites. And we've been trying to do the order out, support local places. Every place has chips and salsa.
Every place has chips and salsa.
So it's a pretty good, you can really dabble in a few.
I like it.
And then Cindy got some, you know that, I'm going to do a wife rant here. So you probably run into this as well.
Nope, my wife's perfect and
just because she's 20 feet away, you can't do that. Cindy goes and buys all these sweets because she wants them. But she gets the kind that's like 70 calories less than the kind you want.
Yeah.
It's this like
the knockoff.
You've never heard of the ice cream before. Nobody's ever heard of it. It's 220 calories instead of 350, which is the Bluebell. Just give me the regular stuff. It's ice cream. I don't want the healthy stuff.
Yeah. If I'm going to eat ice cream, I'm eating ice cream.
Let's go with it.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. Send us what you're into on Twitter at Shane Bacon at MaxHolmuth23.
Yeah. What you're into. For snacks.
For snacks, yeah.
Please
just send us the snack part. Which also could be, we're talking about snacks that you
like
eat.
Food snacks food. During the quarantine.
Like dots or like Reese's. Dots. All right, you got a question.
This is a really great question and it required quite a bit of thinking. From Josh Clark, Josh Clark 06. What television or movie character do you relate to the strongest?
Did you get an answer for this? You asked me this question. I thought about it all day.
Okay. Do you want me to go?
Yeah, go. Because okay. I've got a kind of a crappy one, but I've got one.
I think that there's probably only bad answers to this because I don't think anything could encapsulate anybody perfectly. Also, there's so many options. I chose Mickey Ward from The Fighter. I chose it because of this. Mickey was always kind of in the shadow of his brother, and he was very good at what he did. I felt that for me kind of growing up, even in high school, we always had a kid on the team or in the league that was better. Growing up in Southern California, there's tons of great other great golfers. I get to college, and even as I become like the captain of the team, Michael Kim comes along and just kicks the dog snot out of me, becomes player of the year. Even when I'm a first team All-American, and the kid on my own team is just crushing me week in and week out. And then finally, I feel like I have this like chance to be my own. And like I go out and I took advantage of it. And plus, I really like Mark Wahlberg. And he seems like he doesn't have a lot of hair on his arms, which I appreciate as someone who's going to play me in my biopic.
He's
really jacked like I think I am.
Yeah, well, you got a Peloton. So now you're into
I do
it.
Have a Peloton.
You got the Peloton. You're trying to get yeah, that. By the way, you just have to lift the Peloton to
sure.
get jacked.
Oh, yeah.
Just after you get done with the ride, just lift the whole thing for a while. This is recency bias. I thought that's a great answer.
Thank you.
I thought you did a great job. I thought it was a great explanation. It makes sense. Hopefully that we're getting to a point where there's no body you're in the shadows of anymore.
Yeah.
You're your own person, man.
I'm me now.
Getting close to 30, PGA Tour winner, married, great dog.
Great dog.
Great personality. Got jokes for days.
Thanks, man. I'm only in the shadow of your voice now.
So I feel like this is just lately. With everything going on, you and I are both like this. There's a lot of stupidity out there from people that are either not taking this thing seriously or that are just ignoring everything. I feel like more than I have in a long time, like Jim in The Office, I'm just staring directly into space, annoyed as hell.
Shrugging.
Like just, are you kidding me all the time? Like the world currently, not the world, a small portion of the world that is making us all roll our eyes is the Michael Scott.
Okay.
And I am Jim just going, are you kidding me? I can't believe that's what you've decided.
I love this answer.
Any picture of a park and there's 2,000 people out there, you're like, guys, I ride by a group of young adults. They're all walking directly side by side. That's not social distancing. I'm rolling my eyes at that. People get kind of close. I got to tell them to, you know, hey, man.
Well, it's like you feel like, or we, I guess, feel like when you see these videos that we are crazy, even though we know we're not crazy. Like everyone around us is making us feel crazy. It's literally like the episode of The Office where Jim and Dwight are putting together a party, birthday party, and Dwight spends 45 minutes making the sign to put on the door. Yeah. And Jim is making fun of Dwight in this, thinking, Dwight, you're an idiot. And he says, you've been spending all that time to make this sign? And he goes, yeah, well, people need to know what time the party's at. And Jim goes, hey, everybody, party's at 5:00. And then they all go, yeah, we saw the sign. And he's like, what? You know, like that's what it feels like. It just feels like we can't, like I'm going crazy watching other people be crazy.
Like this is not a joke. My knuckles right now are cracking from washing my damn hands so much. My wife has olive oil next to our sink now for our hands. I'm trying. Listen, I'm not perfect, but I'm at least trying to take this thing seriously.
You're
because
doing
it's
great.
Serious.
Hey, you're doing
it's
great.
Very, very serious. And you see all the other stuff and you're like, you're not helping, man.
Yeah.
Like what you're doing is hurting the people that are trying.
Help.
So that's what I feel like. Great question from Tyler Clerkin. Clerkin.
You're supposed to say it fast. You told me that.
Well, I know, but that one I could get.
All right.
And you can kind of enunciate the K. Clerkin.
Listen, I've made bogeys too, man.
What are the three essential items you have to pack when you travel? Thought this was a great question.
What are the
both of us travel a decent amount?
Essentials.
What are the three things you have to have with you when you pack? And obviously we're not going to go with toothbrush and
I mean,
things like that.
I probably need my golf clubs.
Well, that didn't count either.
Okay, I need a computer or iPad or something for the flight.
And for
the pod.
Nice.
So I can't use the golf clubs, but the podcast is now essential.
Yeah, it's way more essential than your main job.
Sure, yeah, all right. I also need headphones to listen to music, podcasts.
Are you sound canceling on the flights?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You need that.
Yeah. What are you I probably know the answer to this, but how are you on flights?
I'm fine. I don't sleep great on
flights. Do you talk to people?
Oh, absolutely not. I've been social distancing from people on planes since, you know, the year 2000.
Way before 2020. Yeah. Now, you sit down, headphones already on. Will you make eye contact or anything?
I try to absolutely keep my head down.
Window, aisle?
I prefer window. Although I'm becoming a little more of an aisle guy.
I've moved to aisle lately.
I used to think, so if I sit window, no one will ever have to like step over me or do anything like that. But now, if I need to use the restroom, I'm with everybody else where I don't want to step over you because you're in your space, man. Like you've done your thing. So then I'm stuck.
The worst thing in the world is when you have to use the restroom on a flight and you're a window and the person's sleeping.
Yeah, I can't.
And you just feel like a complete jerk.
I've woken up to a guy like full straddle, eye contact, climbing over me. And I'm like, dude, just wake me up.
Just push me on the arm.
Please, good Lord.
What's
your essentials?
Three essentials.
I only gave two. I don't even know my third.
This is a super old person thing. I got one of those like roller balls, you know, when you roll your back out.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the ones that flatten and travel with? I got one as a holiday gift. Unbelievable. I mean, I take it everywhere I go. I'll take it on the one-day trip.
That's like how old are you? Oh, I'm
roll out in my hotel room old. That's where I'm at.
It's like, my favorite thing to travel with.
It is my favorite thing to travel with. I will proudly pop that thing out. You know, I'll leave it right in the middle of my hotel room. Like my muscles are going to feel good all the time. I take my Kindle everywhere I go. Yeah. I read
even
better
to the
road.
Deserted island.
And the deserted island. A lot of people on Twitter chirping about battery power. I mean, this is hypothetical, you know? I mean, come on, guys.
Oh, I got the freaking, I said the Harry Potter, the last Harry Potter was the longest, and I was wrong. Which I appreciate being chirped. I need to learn. It's my favorite stuff. Yeah. The fifth one's the longest by 100 pages.
What about when you dunked on the guy that was trying to come after you out of nowhere?
Yeah, that guy was mean. Truman.
That guy was mean.
That was also part of why I'm quitting Twitter. I'm not going to quit Twitter, but I'm definitely distancing myself.
Yeah, I think it's
like,
important.
It's like going to be like social distancing for your Twitter. It'll be like a 6-hour gap.
That's a good idea. We should take 6 hours and get away from it. It is not a great place to go
right
now.
That guy was mean. And like random.
So yeah.
Also, Lacey made a great point. He said, I was making tour minimum money. Buddy, I know what tour minimum money. It's $18,000 a year. I'm making more than 18 grand. So you better get your facts straight.
I lived there before. Yeah. I know what it is.
Exactly.
I know what those direct deposits are when that world's happening. So yeah, so I've got Kindle, Rollerball, and then this is another nerdy thing. I take my jump rope everywhere I go. I love having my jump rope on the road.
Of course, that's why you have calves like a boxer.
Okay, hotel gyms are the most depressing places when you travel by far.
They're gross.
Every hotel gym is, think about it, you're sitting listening to this wherever you are, you're at the gym, or you're not at the gym, you're outside running, you're in your home, basically, are the two places you are right now, I guess. So out on a walk.
I'm on my Peloton.
You're on your Peloton. When you think about the last hotel gym you went to, just think about the layout.
Nasty.
75 treadmills and stationary bikes, nobody on them. There are four weights. Two of them don't match. It's dirty. They're horrible. No matter how nice the hotel is, almost every hotel gym is terrible. Jump rope you take at least gives you some alternative to just running on a treadmill that probably isn't good for your knees.
I like it.
Love
it's
a good
lightweight,
jump rope.
Easy to carry around.
You got a question.
Yeah. I'm going to do this whole thing. All right. From Dan at Dan27324324267. Nice name. Why do tour players ask for an official for every ruling, even the most simple ones? Do they really not know the rules?
No. Wait a minute. You give this guy the perfect name read, and now you're reading this with attitude?
Yeah, hell yeah, I am.
I agree with, what is his name?
You agree?
I agree with him.
Okay, so let me dunk on both you guys. We're not shown on TV every waking second. You're watching a lot of people when they're getting a ruling for a reason, because they're in the last group, and they're scared to lose
money. Have you called a ruling for Carpath ever?
No.
Come on. Never once?
Maybe if the only time I would do it, here's where I'll explain, is if it's indecisive where closer is. If you're on the middle of the cart path, you have to pick the nearest spot. All right. At times, if you go onto the right side of the cart path, that's in a bad spot. If you go on the left side, it's just in the rough. Maybe it's even better than just in the rough. So you don't want to look like a cheater. So you need somebody's opinion to come over and say, hey, or they just measure with string, hey, this is actually where it closer is, or maybe it is okay for you to go in the better spot. There's also times when the hardest one is the freaking grandstand. When you have to take a drop from the grandstand, I will never remember how many club lengths it takes to get away from it. I can never remember if you drop in the second one or if you don't drop in the second one. I'm pretty sure the grandstand is dropped in the second one. Then there's a TIO. So if something's in your way, you get a drop. Then do you know if you just drop in the first one or do you drop in the second one? So it's a lot more complicated. But the real point about this is I do a lot of drops on my own. A lot.
Give me
in
a
the
percentage.
Water and I'll drop.
I want a percentage of you. Do you say half? Would you say 50-50?
Well,
50?
Over half.
You'd say
at least 75% of the time.
What do you think tour average is calling in an official?
75%.
75% no official?
Yes. Think about how many times you hit the ball in the water and just drop. Are we just going to discount that as a drop? As a penalty drop,
right.
As a rules thing.
I feel like
this question is framed in a way to like
incriminate golf pros.
And it's based off of a narrative that they're trying to push that we don't know the rules because I'm
not saying you don't know the rules. I feel like you guys know the rules a lot better than people think you know the rules. I definitely think there's some people out there that don't know a single rule and they've just kind of had coaches all their lives tell them. I'm sure you probably know people in your head right now that...
See, I really don't.
You
That's
don't.
My point.
You feel
I,
like everybody the people, knows them pretty well.
The toughest part about all of this is, like I said, I'm going to use the cart path as an example again. If my ball is in the middle of the cart path and I don't know what's closer or on all these situations, it's the nearest point. There is always a better option. Like there's always one where you would rather it be nearer to there. You would rather that be the nearest point.
Right.
Okay. So everyone knows that. I can be watching you from 40 yards away and know that that is probably better because you're not behind the tree. So now if you just drop it behind that without consulting anybody, it looks shady. Whether it is or not, it looks shady. Do you want to look shady? No, you don't. So you're going to call the rules official in. I would say that most of the, a lot of drops don't have that problem. I would say that a ton of drops just aren't shown on TV. When I hit it in a sprinkler head, I just drop it where I think it is. I yell over to the guys, hey, I'm on a sprinkler head. They say, okay, cool. And I drop.
Okay.
It happens a lot more. It's just not going to be on TV because it happens so fast. And a lot of the instances that you can remember on TV aren't as simple. On occasion, I bet you it probably is if it's back nine for $1 billion because we're scared of freaking somebody.
But on Thursday, we're not showing a guy dropping from a sprinkler head.
I don't think so. I also just think that a lot of these drops aren't, you just don't even hear about.
Okay. You know what? I'm moving towards kind of your point now. That's fair. I think that's very fair. I think that there seems to be times as a golf viewer and consumer,
sure,
where you're at times rolling your eyes because it's a simple ruling that almost everybody watching feels like they know. That being said, I understand that, you know, I feel like you ever hit a wrong ball in a tournament?
Not since I was very young.
Yeah, so I did it when I was a kid. I used to mark my golf ball with just two blue dots, and I hit a ball, it was a Titleist with two black dots. And I hit it and I got up in the green. I realized it wasn't my ball and I had to go back. And it's one of those moments where you never do it again.
Yeah.
Never. Like once you do it once, you'll never do it again.
Never again.
And I feel like the same thing with this. Once you have a bad drop or you do something wrong and it might cost you money.
It scars you. Yeah, yeah.
It costs you Aeon risk reward challenge points.
For sure.
When that happens, you probably are scared to just do the stuff yourself for a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. You definitely, and then you hear about the stories of people on TV getting called out. I know that they can't do that anymore, but that's a big thing. But yeah, in general, if you're coming down the stretch in the hunt and you have the most simple ruling, I bet you for the most part, there's going to be some I'm still going to do, but you probably ask. But I would say that on Thursday through Saturday, Thursday through Sunday, they're showing 3% of the field, 5% of the field on TV. You're not seeing when I'm in the middle of the fairway, oh, hey guys, I'm on a sprinkler head. Okay.
It kind of goes back to your pros don't hit bad golf shots take, where they're bad golf shots hit all the time. It's just we're showing the guys that are grooved that week for the most part, and that's who you're watching. Sure. I got a great question from one of my favorite Twitter followers, Car for the Course. Max, if the Dodgers were a golfer, what would their game be like? And then he asked me the same question for Arizona basketball. If you want me to go first, I will, or if you're ready, you can go.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's somebody like Ricky Fowler, who is obviously unbelievable, one of the best golfers in the world, but hasn't won a big, big championship yet. He's done everything else, but if he wins one major, or if the Dodgers win one championship, this whole
changes
thing
everything.
Goes away. So I'm sure he knows that. He also knows that he doesn't need to do that to make himself feel more validated, I guess. I'm sure he wants to, but he knows how good he is. We know how good the Dodgers are. Not winning it just gives people stupid, like, you know, comments that they can say. It doesn't take away from the actual skill level of that. Of that team or person.
Yeah, I feel like mine, I was leaning towards like a Lee Westwood, you know, a really, really good player. I think Arizona basketball over the last 25, 30 years would be considered one of the better programs. It's not Duke, it's not North Carolina, it's not Kentucky or Kansas, you know, those programs. Nova obviously kind of eking into that over the last 5 years. But Lee Westwood has been a hell of a player and he's won a whole bunch and he's been great. Arizona has been a hell of a program.
For a long time.
For a while, but when it's the NCAA tournament and it's a big moment, Elite Eight game, get into the Final Four with a great chance to do it, can't quite get over that hump. So I feel like you and I are almost on the same page.
Yeah, it's the only thing you can say about the two teams or two people. There's not a whole lot else. If you argue, how good do you think Ricky is? Well, I think he's really good. Well, then why? And then it's like, okay, well, this is a dumb argument. I can't disprove the
this
argument.
This major thing I always get so frustrated with because what I say is, you're not a major winner until you are.
Yeah.
And
then it just goes away.
Yeah. And then Sergio, people don't talk about Sergio being just a one-time major winner. By the way, I had a few people say,
that was the biggest botch of mine.
Sergio's
totally
name one time on
that.
The one major
that was,
list.
Hey, hand up. That was a terrible miss because he might be my number one after all that.
Wow.
I mean, think about, we were just looking up. He's made 70-ish million dollars, no, $55 million on tour. So he's way, way up there. So that was a bad one. I've got a great question from Jeremy Hartle. if you go 74-73 and miss a cut, what's your mentality? Are you a, hey, it was a bad week, let's keep it moving? Or are you grinding that night? There's many factors, but if it was just an all-around, every facet of the game was off, what's your next step? I try, especially coming down the back nine on Friday, if I know I'm going to miss, if we're talking about one where I missed by quite a bit, I'm trying to find something good like that I can kind of hone in on for the practice for Saturday, Sunday, through to Thursday for the next week. You try to find something. You also try to like take a deep breath and stop completely grinding. Not saying that you're not going to try, but you're going to, like I said, you're not going to beat yourself up anymore. But yeah, you try to find little things. And he mentioned, you know, do you change it if it was missed cut by 10 or, you know, missed on the, you know, by one or something? And yeah, you do. Cause I think there's a lot of cuts that you miss by one where you're like, man, I'm playing just as good as pretty much everyone here. Ball's just not going in. Little things are going wrong. When you miss by a lot, you have to kind of reassess. Maybe, like I said, maybe find something a little bit. So it is a week to week change. But I mean, listen, I haven't missed a cut in 2020. So maybe I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. Truman.
Fleener asked me, he was watching a replay of the 2018 US Open and said, how sweaty does it get inside of our suits?
Oh, great question.
Not sweaty at all.
We have these huge vents
that pump in AC.
Must be nice.
They blast them directly.
The players are just sweating, falling over. The
directly
fans
at us.
Are just passing out.
Commercial break. We're eating lobster.
You're in a three-piece suit with your lobster in one hand and a steak in the other.
Beautifully. Just a perfect tip. It's like 68 degrees.
Are there like masseuses under the table, like massaging your feet?
No.
We can't see them. Oh, no. Oh, wow. So they're really not treating you that well.
Because we've got to be, you know, you've got to be 100% when we're on camera and when we're broadcasting, you got to be locked in. But during commercial breaks, all sorts of snacks. We have a vegetable tray.
A vegetable tray?
Oh, yeah. Carrots, celery, couple of dips.
Whoa.
Yeah. And this is...
Must be nice.
Yeah. I mean, don't double dip. There's a few people in there, but that tray's ours.
Yeah.
Smoothie, if you want one. Nice coffee they'll make us.
A nice coffee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's pretty nice
in the
booth.
Lovely.
It's great. Yeah. You want sushi? You know, you might find it somewhere.
You might.
I mean, that's how that works. But
you never know.
You know, if you ever see us in polos and not suits, that's because it's about 150 degrees outside. It's actually one of the reasons. And we had that last year. The women's AM was in Mississippi in August.
No fun.
No polos.
I have a really quick question from Jolie Guyette at Guyette. Are caddies mandatory? Could a player carry their own clubs? They are mandatory. No, you cannot carry your own clubs. You carry it on your own in a practice round, you get fined.
Okay.
Next question.
Wait. What if you just pick it up and carry it 50 yards.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't like play nine holes.
What if Joe got hurt? What if Joe got bit by a rattlesnake on the ninth hole of a practice round? You had to carry your bag nine holes.
No, can't.
Can't do it.
No.
What would happen?
I would grab somebody to do nine, or it would be
tin cup.
I'd have to bail.
You David Sims it?
Yeah. Or I'd have to, or if this is a real round.
Yeah, let's say it's a real round.
Oh, yeah, then I would just have to grab somebody from the crowd. Or I could try to grab somebody that works for the tour. I've done that before. I had a caddy show up late. Shout out Colton. You know who you are. And I had to have one of the media guys carry my bag for the first hole. I was so
But you
mad.
Can switch in caddies.
Yes.
Okay.
That you can do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
These are things I never knew.
Yeah.
let's
But you can't play a practice round without a caddy.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's where it, you know.
So when you like.
You would think you could.
If you went out on a major. Let's say you're at Wingfoot and you're getting ready for the U.S. Open and you want to just go hit pitch shots and putts.
I can do
Could
that.
You carry three
yeah.
clubs?
I can bring clubs. You cannot hit full shots.
Okay.
You can just hit chip around the green. We do that a lot.
Seems kind of a gray area.
It is a gray area. Because we were joking about that, Xander and I, last year, because we're not supposed to hit multiple shots into the greens. And I was hitting a 20-yard pitch and I did it a lot. And one of the rules officials, who I don't particularly see eye to eye with, you know, basically made a comment of, is this a driving range to me? And
wow.
and then I was kind of like confused. I honestly didn't get it because it was just a pitch. I mean, it was a longer pitch, but it's 20 some yards. And Xander, who's the best, like kind of gets my back and he goes, well, what? He like didn't get it either. We thought he was joking. He goes, what? And he goes, well, you're hitting, you know, you're not allowed to hit, you're only allowed to hit chip shots. You're not allowed to hit like pitch shots. He goes, well, Cameron Champ's pitch shot starts at like 140
yards.
He's
half swinging from 135.
So it is to that point. It's just a gray area. It's more a joke. Everybody, obviously, we don't know like to a T that rule, but I know that if I grab a wedge and I throw a ball at 80 yards and hit it around without, you know, a caddy, without a bag, that's a big no-no. So, but we do that a lot on Wednesday afternoons or Tuesday afternoons, we'll just go walk nine holes with, you know, three wedges and a putter.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So you mentioned in the last episode that one of your hidden talents, one of your best skills outside of golf was spelling.
I can spell oboe now. I totally bought. It was fifth grade all over again, man.
I couldn't
live up to the hype. my own self.
I said I was going to get into a spelling bee, five words. I have no bet or anything.
Yeah, no bet. Just do it. Hey,
you know
pride,
what? You know what? We'll do this. We'll do. You get all five. I will. I mean, I kind of know.
If
the
I get
words.
All five, can you get? Can you got to bring me some to the golf tomorrow?
How about I do like $200 donation to a food bank?
Yeah, sure.
And if you don't get all five, you do $200 donation to a food bank.
Sure.
Keep that going. Does that work?
Yeah.
Now I know.
Do I have
words.
Any chance at these five? Okay, so no.
No, I think you have a really good chance at four.
Oh,
and the
no.
fifth, I think you'll get it. It's gonna take you a couple of minutes.
This is called setting yourself up for failure, guys. Just this is a classic case. I did it last week, and now I'm just setting myself up to crash and burn.
All right, so here we go. First ever get a grip spelling.
Oboe.
Spelling bee. First word is, in fact, oboe. Let's
O-B-O-E,
go.
Oboe. Oboe.
Okay. That was a layup.
Huge. Thank you.
No problem. I wanted to give you oboe
thank
to
you so
start.
Much. I feel very validated.
I need to give a shout out. Josh Bolt sent me a note on Twitter and said I'd love to help out. He sent in a couple of these words. A couple of them are golf specific. I thought it was a good call. So thank you, Josh.
Tell me
for
the caddy, because I don't think there's a right way to spell it.
That's a great point. I think it's
I've looked it up. It's both.
I think you go IE. It's
yeah,
like
they
gray.
They
you can spell
both.
Gray with an A or an E. You know?
I spell it like with like ADDY.
You know what's really thrown me off? So my boss, Mark Loomis, corrects me on this all the time. You know how you say Max and I or Shane
yeah,
and
sure.
I? It's me a lot of the time.
Well, yeah. So all
you
have to do is take
Max
out,
and.
Yeah, and put in me. All right. So we're done for the day. Hey, guys, thanks for listening.
No. We're keeping going. So that's first word oboe, one for one. Can we get a ding? Do you think Tim could throw in a ding?
Ding.
No. He'll do it.
Oh, Tim, do it.
Thanks, Tim. Second word, etiquette.
E-T-I-Q-U-E-T-T-E. Etiquette.
Nice. Nailed it. Do you need a pen to write them down, or are you good? I mean, like, does that help you or not?
Probably, but I'll wing
Lacey,
it.
Lacey, can you grab a pen?
I'll wing it.
If you have one. I'm really worried about he's getting nervous over it. I can see him sweating.
My hands are sweating.
Okay. You're two for two. We hopefully got another ding there.
Ding.
Third word. Take you back to
I don't
earlier
like
this year.
Smile.
Kikuya.
Oh, I have no chance. Starts with a K.
Here we go. We got a all pen. Right. We got a pen coming. Thank you very much.
It. Hold on. K I K U Y U.
Nice.
Yeah.
The pen helps.
Thanks, Lacey.
Love
you.
Look at that. Caddying.
I forgot. It's Kikuyu.
Spelling caddying. I'm impressed.
Spelling caddying.
Three for three. Fourth word you're going to get, I think.
I don't like when you do this, man.
Another golf term.
Okay.
Stymied. Stymied.
Ooh.
Got the pin right there.
This is tough.
You know what?
I
hope Tim
a
pumps in a little music as well. Stymied.
S-T-Y-M-I-E-D. Stymied.
Stymied. Four for four is Max. Going in.
Let's go.
Two.
So this is the one that you... This is the hard one.
Now, when I was in fifth grade, we had a great, great English teacher.
Name?
In fifth grade was Miss Moon.
Miss Moon. Oh, yeah. We shouted her out.
Yeah. Well, Miss Rustenhaven nice. Was, I think we shouted out. Miss Moon, fifth grade. So
Miss Moon.
At this time, there were two of the longest words in the English language. Or our spelling. We had a...
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
No,
is that a real word?
It was a... No. It was a, okay. It was a short week. I think it was like Thanksgiving week, and we were only there for two or three days. So our spelling test was to do the two words.
Oh, no.
One of them was flockanakahillipilification. I'm not going to make you do that.
We don't have enough time.
No. I looked up online. There now are three words, two words ahead of flockanakahillipilification.
You can't even say it.
Yeah, I nailed it. And this word now,
so
your
nervous.
Final word is the fourth longest word in the English language.
Sweet Lord.
Get your pen ready.
All right. Do I have enough ink?
I think you can get this right. for $200 to a food bank of your choice. Four for four. Max is spelling, last word, anti-disestablishmentarianism. Anti-disestablishmentarianism. Would you like it again? Anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Okay.
He is going. Are you done? Are you confident? Are you ready? That was quick. You want a minute or not?
I told you I'm pretty good at this.
I know you are.
I'm ready.
Okay. The
are you
final
keeping
word.
Track? It's going to be hard to keep track.
If I go really fast,
I feel like I could just win.
I got it here. No red squiggle under it.
All right.
Let's go.
I think I have a better chance spelling it than saying it. Anti-disestablishmentarianism. A-N-T-I-D-I-S-E-S-T-A-B-L-I-S-H-E-N-T-A-R-I-A-N-I-S.
Hold on. I think you might have missed one. You're going too fast.
Okay.
Let's try it again. Let's go a little slower.
Oh, I did miss one. I went too fast. A-N-T-I-D-I-S-E. S-T-A-B-L-I-S-H-M-E-N-T-A-R-I-A-N-I-S-M.
Nice! Max Alva, the winner!
That's
five
actually probably
five.
The easiest long word to spell. That's why you said it.
I went with it.
Because you can sound, there's no tricks. Stymied is way scarier because I don't know if it's an I or Y.
Flockenock Hill pillification would come
can
up and get
you. Can you spell that one?
No.
What does it mean?
It means nothing. It means nothing.
It's just a word to be long.
Right. The essence of the definition
that's
was
like the
nothing.
Back tees at Aaron Hill's at being 8,600, just be 8,600.
$200 food. I'll let you send me the link wherever we want. Way to go. I'm very impressed.
Really good. Thank you.
Couple of tricky ones. Josh, shout out. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
I thought you,
you
did a good job of throwing in. And you were very nervous about Kikuyu.
Because it's like, that would be like saying like a Lakers stat wrong. Like, it's in my backyard, man. Like, I know Kikuyu.
A bonus here. A bonus one that doesn't count. Spell Ricky Fowler as in Ricky Fowler and spell Ricky as in Ricky Barnes. Do you know the difference?
Yeah. Ricky Fowler is R-I-C-K-I-E.
Nice.
F-O-W-L-E-R. Ricky Barnes is R-I-C-K-Y.
Nice. There you go. You did good. That was a writing thing you had to kind of know. You always had to spell it correctly and
yeah.
all that stuff. We're running a little long. Obviously, we always are. We have good idea, bad idea.
I don't have them. I want you to go.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, by the way, before this goes, I think we found our skills. Yours is limericks and haikus, and mine is just spelling.
We quit
Yours
and start
is
a website
cooler.
Where we write really lengthy,
You get a lot more
words.
Dates with your skill than I do.
So this is something I did this week. This is a new segment that goes along with good idea, bad idea. This is called old guy yelling from his lawn.
I love that.
Okay. And this is, you can do this as well. You're not as old as I am. This is all
clearly,
this is a new thing. Old guy yelling from his lawn. You ready for it?
Yeah.
So I have noticed through quarantine that people, there's a lot to focus on, but I've noticed that there are stuff people aren't doing as well. One of the things I've noticed, and I notice it across the street from your house, people are just...
Lacey left.
There's just trash and recycling's gone out the window.
Yeah.
It's like that doesn't matter anymore. You know, you're not using refillable cups. If you go anywhere, they're giving you a new cup.
Yeah.
It's just trash and recycling are on the back burner of people's minds.
For sure.
I'm a big recycle guy. I've been for a long time. I used to have recycling when I was in my early 20s, and I would have to drive it from my apartment to a recycling center.
And you're a big recycler. Like, you're good at it.
Like, I like
you,
it. Clean them out. I have the rules. And we live in an area right down the streets, the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Their big push this year during that week was simplifying the wording to make recycling easier for people. There's three steps. So I go out to throw some recycling in on Tuesday. Monday, they pick up our trash and recycling. We have those communal big bins where probably six homes use the same ones. It is already filled to the top. This is the day after they came and picked it up. Filled to the top. There are like kids, like remote control cars in it. There was a coat. There was a lawn chair. I am furious. Furious. None of this stuff's recyclable. Right?
It's just trash.
And now our bin's full for the week. And we're all at home. Everybody's home. We've got more trash and more recycling than we've ever had. And somebody has now used my recycle bin for their BS trash that they're getting rid of because they're cleaning their house. Sorry, you're a hoarder. Don't take my recycle bin. So what do I do? Old guy
What'd
on the
you
lawn.
Do, Shane?
I printed out three landscape. I even printed it out wrong one time and had to flip it to landscape. The waste management three steps to recycling. I wrote with a Sharpie on top. This is not a trash can. underline trash, exclamation mark.
Attaboy.
We can, under it, we can do better.
Oh, good God.
And I taped it to our recycle bin.
You are officially a dad.
Hold on. Let me finish this. This ends with a good, this ends positively. Next day, somebody went in and took all that out of the recycling bin.
No way.
It was
Look
about half
you.
Full of actual recycling, and I noticed a lot of the stuff had been put in the trash can.
Look at you. You know what? Yes.
I did not.
Lacey said, spoiler alert, it was Shane.
No, trust me, I did not go into this, especially this time. This is not the time to go in and dig through somebody's trash. So if somebody did that in one of my neighbors.
I'm proud of you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a big moment
Quarantine, day 17.
It was,
Shane
I'm
makes
I'm going to say that this, there's a long list of things my wife has been embarrassed about being associated with me for a number of years. This is up there.
Hey.
Very high.
I just realized this. That was the most Canadian thing you've ever done.
I'm so proud of myself. Tape. It actually, in the wind, blew the tape off midday. I went and retaped it down. It's still on the recycling bin as of Sunday.
Question. Would you be cool with it if somebody removed it preemptively, but removed it, but then recycled it?
Yeah, you'd have to take the tape off.
See, yeah.
The tape goes in the trash.
Let's say they follow the code.
This is actually a good idea.
Hey, the last one was a good idea.
The tape
and
the
two
thing?
Two good ideas.
Yeah, so,
well, up for debate. We haven't heard the second one.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. You always hate on my ideas. I think we need to put a quota on saying good shot for a round of golf.
Jeez, this is the least Canadian thing you've ever done.
Here's my point.
Back to back.
So when you play golf with pros, you're better because you're nicer than most people. When you play in a round with pros playing their ball and they're actually caring, they rarely say good shot. And it's not because they're being rude. It's just that
it's a valuable comment. Yeah.
I feel like professional golfers.
It means something. If I say good shot and it wasn't, you're going to think I'm being a jerk.
I feel like good shot is now thrown around all the time.
Yeah. I will say that like when we played with Ashton's father-in-law the other day, I felt like, and this is not just him. It's just with people who are not plus handicap golfers who end up being your partner. Like I've been doing it the last couple times I played with some buddies up at Wisp Rock. If they're my partner, if that ball is remotely good, I'm ultra positive. Good shot. That's fine.
That's fair.
So I do feel like, to your point, I will say it more in a regular day of golf. But if I'm on tour, it happens. If you say it, it's good. It is good because you don't want to sound condescending. You don't say good drive, and it's like in the left rough. It's like, well,
what would you say for me? What would you say constitutes a good shot comment to a fellow pro on tour in a tournament round?
I think we talked about this. I generally think that if I think I would have liked it, I'll say good shot.
Right.
So like I said, there's times where I'll have a very straightforward bunker shot and I'll hit it to 8 feet, which will look pretty good from all accounts. I wouldn't say good shot to that, but there's times where I'll be in the terrible spot in a bunker and hit it to 20 feet and I'll say good shot because I know that like if I was there, like that was good. Like we all, and I want people to know that like I get that that was hard. Like if it's a plug lie, middle of the bunker and you chop it out to 25 feet, hey, good shot, like kept on the green, like that,
gotcha.
We know. But if it's a wedge from the middle of the fairway and you hear all these claps going on, but it's 15 feet, I'm not going to.
Does that throw you off when the fans cheer or don't cheer? Does that when you can't really see where you're going?
Yeah, I mean, there's been times it happens both ways.
You can't trust the crowd.
I hit it to a foot somewhere at the players and we got a smatter of applause. The first time I've been kind of not super nice to the crowd, Joe is actually behind me doing the same thing on 14 at Pebble this year. It's so hard. It's so firm.
Hardest screen ever.
It's the dumbest screen ever. And it's just the hardest day ever. And I hit a wedge and that shot, you don't know if you're close, if you're over the green. If you're over the green, it's double, you know,
right.
All these things. So it's a very nervy shot. I hit it what I thought was a really good wedge, came off like how I wanted to hit it, not like maybe not a clap. I saw one person like move their hands, you couldn't hear noise, so at least I probably knew it was on the green. I'm walking up anxious, you know, I'm walking up kind of faster, get up there. My pitch
wait
mark,
you walked fast.
I walked even faster.
Doesn't sound like you.
That's my skill. My pitch mark is within an inch and a half of the hole and my ball is 12 feet, and I looked at them. And I said, not a single clap, huh? And then Joe comes up to me and goes, nobody wanted to clap? Like, not as mean as I just said it, but basically, like, nobody wanted to clap, and everyone laughs. And he's like, you're allowed to, like, it would have been nice to, I'm 12 feet away. Like,
right.
It's unbelievable. I don't think anybody's seen a lot of shots, like, to 2 feet. So that's where it throws you out. But you also get a clap, like, when it's 30 feet. But I don't care. It's just, you do, it's nice when you get like the oh, and then like it dies down
because you rely on walking them and you can't see it.
It's going to be close. Not that it changed where the ball is. I get it, but throughout the course of a week, it does lower your stress level when you know, like, hey, I hit it really, really close.
Yeah, I you hit one on when I was following you at Waste Management. You hit one on 14, and I was down by the fairway, and I heard no clap.
Yeah.
And so I'm walking up thinking you missed the green, and that was when you made that birdie on Friday when you kind of birdied 14, 15, 17, and 18.
Yeah, it's all. It also depends the crowd. If it's a crowd of like your family and friends, like my mom has it like down. If she's a four, like a someone who walks in front, like as far up so she can see the ball land, and she knows like. She knows if I want it to be clapped. So if I hear her clap, I'm like, I'm good.
Lacey, how good of a shot has to be the max hits for you to clap?
Inside 5 feet.
Wow.
Yeah, well, listen. Hey, we got high standards in the...
Okay, second
like
shot.
Like with any club in second the green. We got high standards in the home.
You got a 12-footer. Hit inside 5 feet. She's going nuts. Everybody's going like, what's wrong with this girl?
Hey, that's fair.
Awesome. Well, that was my... So what do you think? Quote on a good shot. Bad idea?
I like it. I don't, but how would you value the, how do you set the numbers?
I
like
think
a handicap base?
Yeah, I think we chart it out. I think if you're
I'm starting to like it.
Yeah, I think what we do is we need to come up with a
this
specific.
This is a dumb idea, but it is a
it's a bad
good
idea. It's a bad idea that could creep in a good idea territory.
I like it.
If you're a, you know what else on the,
what
conversely,
would you like me to clap for?
You know what? You're good at it. You're already good at this. This is more for the, this is more for people that I feel like say good shot on every shot.
Fair.
On the other side of it, since we're talking about something that I feel like might be considered a little negative, I want to say, stop being frustrated when you're a 12 handicap and you hit a wedge to 25 feet.
Yeah, that's great.
That's a really good shot.
That's great.
You hit a great shot.
Yeah.
I play with a lot of guys that get frustrated when they hit the green in regulation.
I mean, a two putt is good.
Two putt, great.
Like in general.
Yeah, you hit a bunker shot out of the bunker and it's on the green. Don't be frustrated. That's a good
clap
shot.
For yourself.
Yeah. I talked about my buddy Mark Fried earlier. Yeah. He asked the question about what our favorite snack was. He's the king of this. Gets frustrated. Hits the green regulation. Hey, Mark, you did well.
Birdie putt.
That was awesome. I'm proud of
you. You did better than expected.
Yeah, that to me is a double good shot.
Yeah.
You get it after you hit it and when we get to the green.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it to you twice. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Any parting words from Max?
No, I feel like everyone's starting to get in the groove of this self-quarantine stuff. It's starting to become a little more normal. Lacey pointed out the first week went slow. This week seems to be going faster. So I hope everyone feels that way.
What are you doing in terms of keeping the golf game sharp?
You hitting
balls?
I have been practicing. Yeah.
Okay.
No one is at TBC. I played Wisp Rock. We have the PVC pipe in the hole. So you don't actually have to touch the cup. You don't have to touch the pin. Take our own cart. No caddies now.
Okay.
Started a caddy fund, fortunately, for everybody because it's obviously a tough time. But yeah, everyone's keeping their distance, but being able to play has been very nice. You know, got to hit balls this morning at TBC, trying to stay in shape with this friggin' Peloton. I'm already obsessed third day in. I'm going to talk about it a lot because I feel very proud of myself for working out at all. So that's what I'm trying to do, stay sharp. We're going to do I'm assuming we're walking a Papago tomorrow.
Yep. A little money game at Papago. They're doing game. I think they've got the Fanoodles.
Oh, they do the noodles? Them the, cool, yeah.
Yeah, I did a noodle golf walking.
It's like a
walking.
Mix of fun and noodles because it's...
Fanoodles. Noodle. I don't really know if that's the name of them. I'll call them that
your
my entire
sharp.
Life.
You just shot 66 with a double on the 17th hole, everybody.
Golly.
How good is that?
I was... Max, I'm going to tell you this. It's as good as I've hit it in a long time.
So I got
time.
Something to watch tomorrow.
You know, I don't compliment my golf game ever.
Yeah, you never
ever,
do. It's
ever,
been
ever.
Great.
And the hole I made double on, 17, I had hit every green in regulation. I hit 16 greens in reg going to 17. And it was 168 hole, par 3.
God, this is such a golf thing.
And I hit 8 iron, and I'm thinking it's just a super standard 8 iron. It's not a smoked one. It's not a baby one. It's just stocky 8 iron. And I had one of those days, I know you've had plenty of these days, where when I'd hit the shot, I'd look up, and it was right at it. And I kept being like waiting for the moment where it wasn't going to be. And I hit 8 iron right at it, and it kind of gussed a little bit, and it was short. And it's a little weird short, but I was shocked it was short.
Yeah.
Because I hit it like I wanted to, so I wasn't even frustrated, and I just missed a little putt.
Hey.
I mean, I'm going to do that right now.
Yeah.
I've just not been putting great, but it was fun because even the hole I didn't do what I was trying to do on in terms of score, I feel like I hit a good golf shot.
That's
you know?
All that matters.
And
well,
so I was
awesome.
trying to walk with
I hope you do it again tomorrow. I'd love to watch
it. I know. I hope we partner up. Max, that's Max, anti-establishmentarianism. He will spell any question you send to him on Twitter, even though that's going to be
pretty
hard.
I'm doing 6 hours every day or so. Of
Peloton Max Homa.
Distancing.
The new man. Artie's lost 5 pounds. You can
I
see
wonder
it.
What I'm worse at from Rory, this or Peloton? yawning. I think I've got him in the sweating, although he did put up a great picture. But
God, that guy's an animal. Jonathan Wall, too, an animal.
Yeah, what
did you see
heck?
Some of those numbers? You guys have a safe week. Be smart. Don't be an idiot.
Wash your hands.
And donate if you can. If you can donate,
yeah, donate. Shane.
Do it.
Donate $200.
We appreciate it. I got to do it when we get off. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.